Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, your host, speaker, and very passionate speech-language pathology advocate. If you are new to the field of speech pathology or just want to stay fresh, this podcast is for you. Here, I will share with you my wisdom and experience of more than 23,000 hours of one-on-one skilled intervention working around the world as an in-the-trenches medical SLP and now as an assistant professor for an accredited CSD program. I want to help you see the big picture of what you're doing and connect those small dots of what you know and how to apply it in your practice, those missing links, helping you be the best, most confident, and most effective SLP you can be. There's no better time than now to freshen up. You totally got this. Welcome to this episode of The Missing Link for SLPs. I'm here with Melissa Farrow, and we are so excited to have you, Melissa. Thanks for jumping on.
I'm glad to be here.
You were introduced to me through a friend, and she said you were just so passionate about what you do. So tell us who you are and what you do.
I would love to do that. Again, my name is Melissa. I am a medical speech-language pathologist. I earned my degree in 2012 from Duquesne University, and that's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I live in Texas now. I've lived in Texas for many years, but I was born and raised in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. I've been married for almost 22 years to my husband, Joe, who is also a speech-language pathologist and also born and raised in the Pittsburgh area, not in the same neighborhood as me, but in the same suburb area. So we have a super cool 16-year-old daughter, Naya, and a little Cavalier King Charles Spaniel puppy, Lucy Lou, and that's our little family. This speech pathology was actually my second career, believe it or not. I was a professor for many years in the earth sciences field. So I taught geography and geology, meteorology, all those fun things for many years. And then my daughter came along, and it was really evident from the very beginning of her life that she had some special needs. So I decided to put that career aside and stay home with her and support her. She had to have some early intervention services and things like that. So I stayed home and we did that fantastic fun stuff of OTPT speech. And people often ask me, why did you become a speech pathologist? Was it because your husband's a speech pathologist? And as much as he'd love to say yes, the answer is no. It was really my experiences with early intervention speech pathology and an amazing speech pathologist for my daughter. My husband knew right away that he was a father, not a therapist. So we got a therapist instead of him.
Wow.
That was probably the smartest thing he ever did, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. You're going to be your spouse's therapist or your parents' therapist or your kids' therapist. You have to get professionals who have objective views. And So that's what he did. And we did that for 3-4 years. And it sparked my interest in this field. And I knew that I've always been a person who has just wanted to live this life helping people. And I felt like I was doing that in the field that I was in, and I enjoyed it very much. And I saw a lot of similarities between speech pathology and education, because that's what
Absolutely. This
speech therapist was doing in my home 3 days a week. She was teaching me. She was more than she was teaching my daughter. And I just knew that this was something that I felt like I could really get into and do. And I, of course, thought I was going to work with children because, hey, that's where it all started. And that's probably the wonderful thing about this field is that there's so much you can do in it. And you think you might be in one area, but actually you fall in love with another. You just never know. So once my daughter progressed in her therapy to a place where it wasn't as intensive as it was in the beginning. I went back to school. I went to Duquesne University, like I said, and I graduated and I've been practicing as a medical speech pathologist ever since. I never actually did work with kids. In my clinical rotation, I was introduced to the world of swallowing and swallowing disorders and fell in love with it. And I've been doing that ever since.
And you went on and became board certified in it.
Yes, I did. I realized very early on in my graduate work that I really wanted this area, medical speech pathology was something that was really drawing me. And like I said, when I was introduced to the aspects of swallowing disorders and I saw the amazing impact that it had on the patients, the families, mm-hmm. just the change of life, mm-hmm. I just immediately, I knew that this is where I could really make impacts in people's lives and help them. And that's why I was doing this career in the first place. And so I graduated and I just kept educating myself on the in the field of swallowing and in dysphagia management, because I had a great program, no doubt about it. My coursework was really good and my instructor was very strong in the area of dysphagia, but it was not enough. I absolutely knew that I had to continue on with educating myself, and part of that was becoming board certified. I also got certified in modified barium swallow study, impairment profile, which is a standardized way to do modified barium swallow studies. One of the things you learn so quick in this field is that you have to do things in a very standardized way so you can have objective measures to say this is the baseline of where you're at, or this is where your disorder lies, and this is how we can get you better. And if you don't have standardized ways of doing that, you don't have ways to help your patients or prove that you're helping your patients. So I looked for opportunities to do things that offered ways for me to help my patients in standardized ways. And I think that's the sciencey side of me.
Sounds like the scientist.
Yeah, the scientist side of me that likes those numbers and objective measures rather than, oh, I think that worked. That just doesn't jive with my brain very well.
So. I love the science side because I will have this idea, then I'll run my numbers and I'm like, aha, it does work. So exactly. I'm totally with you on the science side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Which
is probably why you started your company, Global Flow Life. It sounds like a very sciencey type company. Tell me about that.
I would love to tell you about that. I love that it's sciencey. Isn't that great? So Global Flow. Global Flow was really born out of, like I said, my husband also is a medical speech pathologist, and myself. We now work at the same facility, but prior to this, we never worked together, but we worked in hospital settings and skilled nursing facilities and long-term acute care, things like that. We've had experience in those areas. And evidence-based practice, that is using the evidence that we have in our field, based in literature, to guide our clinical decision-making, to give us the foundation for what we want to do with our patients. That's been the backbone of my clinical practice and my husband's clinical practice. So the things that we do as clinicians since the get-go. And when I heard about this thing called the International Dysphagia Diet Standardization Initiative, some people call it IDDSI, but the easy thing to call it is ITSE. That's the new term we're hearing. So ITSE is how I'll refer to it. I thought, wow, this really is resonating with me because it's objective, it is number-based, it is saying it's standardized, so I'm going to read about it. And so I started to delve into the literature on it, and I knew a lot about the scientists that clinicians that were developing it. Dr. Katarina Steele is an amazing, world-renowned clinician in our field in swallowing and swallowing disorders. So I knew that anything she was associated with was going to be something that was very worthwhile to dig into. And so I started, my husband and I both started reading the literature on it. And we went to the Dysphagia Research Society conference, and they were unveiling ITSE and talking about it. And I went and talked to the researchers and said, "This is amazing. Here's my questions." We were sold. I knew that standardized measures for modified diets was so important to dysphagia management, because right now, before ITSE, we had the National Dysphagia Diet, right? NDDS, yep. And then we had anything else you felt like calling whatever you wanted to call it.
Right,
United States.
I remember those years. It kind of looks like this. It's kind of like, you know, when you pull your spoon up and the tomato juice or the apricot juice, that's nectar thick.
Right.
So subjective. Oh my gosh. And the people we were educating were like, yeah, uh-huh, sure.
Yeah, right. And if, as long as it's mushy, it's puree. That works.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
And you know, that's not good enough. And why is it not good enough? Not because I say it's not good enough, but what the literature says that, you know, people, that are require modified diets, and we do a modified barium swallow study on them, and we say, this is what the problem is, and this is what they have difficulty with. And then you don't give them that prescribed diet because yours doesn't match mine, and that next facility that they go to doesn't even have that. How are we assuring that our patients are safe and actually that we're rehabilitating them, because we keep changing the medium that we're using, right? And so that's a big problem, and it's always been a big problem in terms of modified diets. And I think one of the other things the literature demonstrated clearly was we rely on modified diets as a mainstay of dysphagia management, but we know very little about it. As a matter of fact, most of the literature done on modified diet efficacy is on pureed. And so we don't have any information on what about the other types of diets? Are they, do we need to do those or not? We don't have those answers because there's no standard. And one of the things you know in research is that you have to be able to compare your study to my study to everyone else's study to say, right, yeah, there's a standard. But when you're using a different measure than me, I can't compare mine to yours. And so we have no evidence, no valid evidence to say this is or is not working. And ITSE is now a way that we can all be saying the same thing and have that standard. So maybe moving forward, we can have more research to say, yes, we're relying on modified diets, and it's a good thing, because here's the evidence now that we say that we have to say this is helping our patients, or this isn't helping our patients, and we need to make change in our practice.
So for new students or those moving into the medical SLP world, it's vital to know what you're working with, what you're recommending, and have those numbers behind everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's your very, very baseline start. And ITSE is a way to do that. The framework that they have is standardized. It's been validated. And it is something that is can be used from one clinician to the other. So when I say ITSE level 4, you will have a picture in your head of exactly what that is. You have a vocabulary of terminology and know that, okay, ITSE level 4 is going to look like this. It's going to behave like this. It's going to do this in the oral cavity, and it's going to do this when it goes down the pharynx. Is wonderful, right? Versus puree or ground or mechanical soft or NDD3, those are all very different things. And so that we need as clinicians, because as a new clinician, when you get out there, you're going to see that your patient goes from one clinician to one setting to another setting to another setting, and each one of us are treating that dysphagia. The dysphagia hasn't changed. The person's setting has changed, but the treatment needs to remain the same because the dysphagia hasn't changed.
So the common denominator is the dysphagia. The variables are the clinicians.
Yes.
And by introducing the IDDSI standards, you're minimizing variables.
Absolutely. And that's science, right?
That's science. So question, this is something I don't know. I like to fancy myself knowing a bit about it, but this is something I don't know. When we do our modified barium swallow studies, is the Baribar and the barium trials we use, are they IDD? Do they line up with the IDDSI standards?
That is a fantastic question. And Dr. Steele did a study using Baribar mediums in order for us to have a standard to say that this is level one, level two, level three. She hasn't done it with the solid sections, but she's done it with the liquid. So the standard for Baribar is ITSE standardized. But if you're not using that, then the answer is no. So it's only for that type of barium. For the modified barium swallow study. And not every country uses Baribar. I think in Canada, they can't get it. So so it really is dependent on where you're located. If you're outside of the United States, you might not have access to it. But the cool thing about ITSE is that even if your medium is not doesn't have the ITSE labels on it, you can always test it. And that's the key, is that you can test whatever you're using and say, okay, this behaves like a ITSE level two.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ITSE level three. So you can be confident in saying that it, in terms of being able to translate that to the next clinician who's working at a skilled nursing facility to say, I gave this patient ITSE level two drinks during a modified barium swallow study. And so then I can take that patient and say, okay, then I'm giving them ITSE level two at the skilled nursing facility. And they should be the same as long as we're using the same testing measures.
Right. Something else interesting, Fresh SLP is in 9 different countries now. So conversations that we have today about international dysphagia diet, this is going to apply worldwide.
Yes.
Yep.
And it has been implemented in many, many countries, and it's being implemented in many, many countries. The wonderful thing about it is it's an all-volunteer group that is actually translating the original work into all these different languages, which is so great. So, you know, we can all really, truly be speaking the same language. And I can't think of another standardized method in our field that is like that. It's a unique, wonderful
critical
thing that we have in dysphagia management that I think is going to impact patients tremendously.
Excellent, excellent. We have maybe 10 minutes left. So it goes fast, but you and I have already decided we're going to jump on again. We may finish this conversation, and I also want to talk to you about why it's important to be board certified and have that, or why that's an option for clinicians. I could talk to you for a long time, Melissa. This is exciting to me. This is exciting. So when I say I'm a passionate speech language pathologist, I so am. This so gets me going. So,
I'm sorry. I told you I could go on and on. So I will try to back on track.
Well, we're speech pathologists. We talk a lot. That's good. That's good.
Okay.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, I started my company because we love ITSE, obviously. We saw, though, the problems when my husband and I started talking about, okay, how are we going to implement ITSE in our clinical practice? We saw the problems that would arise. And we saw what I think is probably one of the most important problems that we saw was quick and easy access to the tools of the framework.
Mm-hmm.
And working in different settings and having experiences with not having access to things, to supplies, like you have to have the correct syringes in order to do the test. You can't just grab any old syringe off the shelf. It has to be the ITSE standardized, the syringe that was used during the ITSE standardized testing. So it's the specific type of syringe that has to be available. The printouts for the framework for the instructions for testing are color coded for specific reasons. So you have to have that color printout in order to give to your patients so that you can follow the instructions. And sometimes speech pathologists don't even have access to a printer, let alone the color printout, right? We can't access those things at many times. And then even the time spent to get it all together in this world of productivity, which I've experienced in my life, my husband's experienced, we don't have the 10 minutes in our day that we're to gather up all the things that we want to gather to give to our patients because that's not billable time. And so a lot of times clinicians run into the issue of time to put together the things they want. So we envisioned this one-stop solution, which was our ITSE testing kits. And right now we have the drink test kit, which is an all-in-one. It has a syringe, it has the color-coded instructions, and it has a link for a web for a YouTube channel where we have the actual video instructions as well. And eventually we want to come out with the food side of it as well. So we just really started our company in the last year. So we're still growing and learning, and I don't have a business degree, so we're not entrepreneurs by, you know, all experience. We're learning as we go. So it's slow, but it's going, and that's where we want to go with it. I think that really why we started Global Flow was that we had a passion for serving patients with dysphagia. We really understood how swallowing impacts patients and caregivers and family members in their daily lives. And then just the devotion to standardized practice. And so all of those things came into a perfect alignment for us to say, hey, this is what I think we could do. And we started Global Flow for that reason. We started it in our living room. It all started from, you know, just notebooks and writing logos and designs and drink test kit designs and everything, all the way down to the research for becoming an LLC was in our little 2-bedroom apartment in our living room. So that's how it all started. And then here we are today.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story. I think when something is fueled by passion and logic, it's a winning combination.
I agree. Absolutely.
Excellent. And there's a need for what you're doing.
I think so.
What words of advice would you have for the new speech language pathologist?
So I'm going to say that, and I mean this with all the love in the world, because I am an educator at heart. I was a professor. I love students. I love teaching. I love learning. But one thing you need to know when you come out of your program is that you are not an expert in speech pathology. You have, this is why you have to keep learning. Learning cannot stop on the day of graduation. It just cannot. There's so much to know in our field, and we need to keep applying that knowledge because things change as we learn more. As research grows, we need to grow with it. And that's probably one of the things that I've seen that is a little bit hard for me, is that sometimes I run into clinicians and I think, you know, we really need to continue to grow. What you're talking about is stuff that doesn't apply anymore, and here's why. So continue to learn after you graduate and continue to be open to learning. You know, don't be feeling like, oh, that person thinks I just don't know anything because they're trying to tell me about some research article like I don't read. Don't be defensive about it. Just be open to learning. To be an expert in the field, you need to keep learning so that you can keep growing, and then you will be an expert in the field. That's how it happens. It doesn't happen from a piece of paper that you get when you graduate, right?
Right.
And your speech pathology license is truly a license to learn.
Oh, I like that. License to learn.
Yes, that's what it is.
So maybe we can change LLCs for limited liability companies to license to learn companies, right?
I like that.
Absolutely. One of my favorite things about becoming a professor has just been the curiosity of the students I work with.
Absolutely.
Just like, hey, professor, what if this or what about that? And it's just, it's wonderful to always have that sense of learning. And that's what these podcasts are about. It's how to learn, how to continue to learn, and how to just keep that light where you're just like, what else? What else can I do? You mentioned before we jumped on that there are some resources you might want to share.
Yeah, the ITSE website is an amazing place with all of their literature that supports what ITSE was based on. So you can go and read all the literature. It's open access, so you don't have to pay for it, which is great. They have the framework and descriptors, and they have links to resources. So it's an amazing resource. So I would like to include that and make sure that everybody has that information available.
Website right now?
It is, I believe it's just itsi.org, IDDSI.org.
D's not T's. IDDSI.org. All right, yep. We'll include that in the show notes. Wonderful. Along with your links, you've got a nice little package of links. You've got your website, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Yeah. This month for Better Speech and Hearing Month, I've been posting all about ITSE on Instagram and Facebook, and just giving little snippets of information about each of the levels. And then next month is of course Dysphagia Awareness Month. So that's going to be fun. I'm going to be doing a lot of, I love literature. So I'm going to be talking a lot about literature, but I want to talk about it in the frame of the patient. Patient outcomes, ethics with this diet modifications and things like that. So I'm excited about just talking about that next month too.
Excellent. So listeners can find you at globalflowlife.com, and yes, all your other links will be from there, and they can follow and be as excited and passionate as we are, right?
I hope so.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. You and I've already decided we're going to jump back on, and you're going to explain why it's important to be a, you explain it in your words.
So a board certified swallowing specialist, yes. I'd love to come back and talk about that and about just the process of it. I am a mentor for people that would like to do the process, and I help them kind of get ready for the big application. And it's pretty intensive, but I think that if you go in with the right kind of mindset, it is doable. It is absolutely doable. I did it. So if I can do it, anybody can, I'm telling you.
Excellent. Excellent. So then until next time, take care and go find Melissa Farrow at globalflowlife.com.
Today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.